All right, everybody. How are we doing today? This is John Dykstra with the Size of Sound podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you guys are having fun with this. I'm having a heck of a lot of fun. I've got my buddy James Lindenschmidt here. He came all the way down from Maine to join me here in Nashville. So him and I are going to talk about isolation. What does it mean? What's the difference between isolation and treatment? There's two very different things, both acoustics. Why the heck don't they do the same thing? We'll get into that. My new friend, Tim from Argosy, we're going to talk about their wide range of studio furniture, all the different things that they can provide to enhance the ergonomics of your studio and make your life easier and more comfortable. We're also going to talk a little bit about hot yoga because him and I went and did that together today, which is a whole heck of a lot of fun. Let's round this thing out with a new product. Let's see, the portable isolation booth. We've got a new version of that, the PIB 2.0. And it also has a Big Brother PIB pack, which is a sort of combination of a few PIBs and a roof on that PIB, which really gets you the ultimate vocal recording situation. And to put a weird spin on the isolation aspect of things, it does isolate your vocals from the characteristics of the room around you. So some nuance. What is isolation? How do we install stuff? Let's dive in. Got my friend James here, and we want to talk a little bit about the difference between isolation and treatment. You know, being folks who advise the general public on acoustics, I'd say, you know, there's one a day that I just can't help because, you know, they want to stop a rumbling freight train from waking their infant from 10 feet away, you know. So why is isolation different than treatment?
It's a different problem, right? I mean, you know, the stopping sound is a different problem from making things sound good, right? And the techniques that you use to solve those problems are different as well. You know, in the case of your freight train waking up the infant, that's going to require construction and very specific, extensive construction to get that job done, because that's a big problem. You know, if you've got, you know, train tracks right behind your apartment building or something, and it's an apartment building, so it's a rental, you know what I mean? And you can't really build that out the way it would need to be built anyway. You know, so it's a systemic structural problem with the building that we have to change, which is different from making a room sound good.
One metaphor that I always use is, you know, the absorption panels, they're porous, right? So they do soak up sound. So I do understand, like, the general mindset. It's like, oh, it soaks up sound. It's gonna help, right? But, you know, soaking is not the same as stopping. So the metaphor I use is, you know, you wouldn't build an umbrella out of a paper towel. A paper towel is great at, you know, soaking up a spill, but it doesn't stop water. It just soaks up enough to, you know, at some point it's going to fail as an umbrella, I guess, is the point. There are some things that, you know, we do practically talk about often that aren't GIK products. You know, I think at least once a day I'm telling somebody they should put exterior steels on their door, you know, so that when the door is shut, the door is actually fully sealed, you know, because that's usually going to be the weakest link. And that's, I think, probably the most important thing, the aspect of isolation acoustics is that weak link philosophy. Okay, what is currently the biggest problem in this room? It's often the door or it's often the window, right? And those are some things that people can address relatively affordably before things start to get really messy and dusty. But it's important to know, like, hey, if I get my windows up to an STC level where it's equal to the walls, will my problem be solved or not? And really, you need to do some analyzing of the environment. How low is the sound that's getting into your room? How loud is that sound? And then you can start assessing whether or not it is something that's solvable with just new windows and doors, or if it's going to be a little bit more involved in that.
It's all about the weak link in the chain, right? If you build out your walls to a 70 dB STC, but you've got a leaky window, doesn't matter. All that work you did, is still the sound's still going to come through the window. But, you know, with isolation, though, there's, again, we use the same word for different concepts, right? And in this case, like, we talk about isolation in a recording context, right? We want to isolate the acoustic guitar track from the vocal track. That we can help with, right? And we've got tools to do it. So that type of isolation is something that we can definitely help with and provide solutions for.
I think we should probably, you know, industry-wide, we should probably start talking about bleed control rather than isolation if we want to put a finer point on it, because that's really what we're doing. You know, if you were to set up gobos and isolate a guitar cab from the drums, but if you were to solo that track, you'd still hear some of that bleeding through, but you're minimizing the amount of that bleed.
Yeah, you're controlling it so that the mix engineer has options, basically, is the idea. You know, because if there's a lot of bleed, you're just limited in what you can do.
But when it comes to, you know, recording isolation, minimizing bleed in recording, I think we're sitting in front of some of the best products in the market with the Gobo blocks that we have behind us here.
No doubt.
Yeah. So we've got the Gobo wall, which would be six of the Gobo blocks, and they're three high, two wide. And then the Gobo mode, which would be a 2x2, 4 foot wide by 4 foot tall, which gives you some variance and ability to, you know, have some lower ones or some taller ones. And of course, the walls could be converted into a mode too. It's essentially six panels. So you do it anything you want with it once you get that pack in your studio. But, at 10 inches thick and that size, you can really get some good isolation from track to track. You were telling me just earlier about, ears and microphones and how they work a little bit differently and how maybe that does work a little bit better in a studio than it does trying to keep a roaring, rumbling freight train from keeping your baby awake.
Yeah, no doubt. And for me, all this stuff that we're talking about, you know, meaning gobos, movable panels in a recording scenario, the way I think about that, it's an extension of mic technique, right? Because when we use a mic, that mic's going to have a pickup pattern. Like right now, we're using these really cool ribbon mics that have a very specific pickup pattern. And we can place those intelligently, and a good engineer will do that. So it's going to pick up what we want it to and reject what we don't want it to. So that combined with the acoustic treatments around it, especially freestanding stuff that we can bring in close. You know, if we right now we're shooting a podcast, but let's say you and I were singers. This is obviously a different universe, but if, if we were singing, we could put one right here between us, right? And then that would give even more isolation and control the sound even more. So I just see it as an extension of setting up the mics in a way that's going to capture the performance and give the mix engineer options. Again, that's what it's all about. The vocal mic is the vocal mic mostly. You know, you might hear a little bit of the guitar if they're playing at the same time, or the other performer or whatever, but it's mostly going to be that instrument. So again, the mix engineer, it's less about controlling problems like bleed and more about just creative decisions to make it sound good.
Yeah, you bet. And that's a big part of live tracking, right? Control rooms, we've got a pretty finite wish list of what we want to do. Tracking rooms that, you know, my band space, I can't tell you how many different times I rearrange the panels in that room to create something that sounds just a little bit different. And once you start getting these things in your space and hearing what they do, I can't emphasize enough how important it is for everyone to move those things around and see how cool and different things can get just by moving panel placement and how those panels relate to where the microphone is and where the drum kit is and what mics work great with a panel behind it and which mics don't need a panel behind it because they, you know, reject everything that's behind it. So there's no right or wrong when it comes to tracking. And I think that's probably my favorite part about tracking is that it's so artistic and how we.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you had this, you know, where should I set the mic up in my studio? We'll get inquiries like that. People think there's one right way to do it and the rest of the ways are wrong. And that's just not how it works. And then, you know, like you said, if you've got portable panels, you can move and just move things around to get different tones. Then you throw in that these are reversible, right? Absorption on one side, binary diffusion on the other. That's different too. You know, depends on the sound you want. You know, for lead vocal, maybe you've got the absorption in, to have a little tighter, more in focus sound. But then you want to do acoustic guitar overdub. So you flip them around. Now you've got a little more life in the treble and it just sounds a little more natural.
Hey everyone, John Dykstra here, Size of Sound Podcast. I am sitting here with Tim Thompson, the president and CEO of Argosy Council.
Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So we are in Center 615, the home of GIK Acoustics in Nashville, and sitting in front of one of your lovely products. Tell me a little bit about what we're looking at here, Tim.
Yeah, this is the Halo workstation, specifically the Halo S, which is the extended model. Just provides a little more workspace between the rack turrets. And we came out with the Halo workstation, which is extremely popular since 2015.
Okay.
And like a lot of our new product designs, customers will make requests. And this was one where they were asking for a little more desk space. They love the compact footprint of the Halo and the transparency acoustically and everything else, but they just needed a little bit more desk space. And so we stretched it a bit.
Okay.
And we have the Halo S model here.
So I'm curious, when you say they, right? I mean, I'm sure there's often, you know, hey, we've got 20 or 30 people asking for this change.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Is there ever a situation where only one person asks for the change and you're like, man, we got to get ahead of this. This is going to be something that everyone's going to be asking for.
Yeah. In fact, I remember back years ago when we had the Dual 15 workstation first released, and we had a handful of different rack module configurations set up for it. And at that point, we had actually shipped the Dual 15 down to a mastering facility here. I don't think we knew it was a mastering facility at first, based on how it was purchased, but later we got a call from Glenn Meadows, and he made some suggestions, and which we took to heart and made that change for him. And it became the Dual 15M specifically for mastering. And so that's an example of a product change and redesign that happened that became definitely part of the product line.
Sure.
And has done really, really well. And that's one of the things that we loved about the hybrid model that we have of working, you know, and the ability to work directly with customers, is a lot of times we will develop those relationships that last.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you're talking with the right person, you know, there's a certain level of weight, right? Where it's like, okay, this person knows what ergonomics is going to be all about, because we know this person sits in front of a desk all day because this person does nothing but make hits.
Mm.
So like, obviously a little more weight, right, you know, goes into a conversation of that nature.
Yeah.
Ergonomics has to be one of the first things you're thinking about, right? When you're,
absolutely,
when you're putting together one of these beautiful consoles, right? I mean, keeping things within arm's reach,
mm-hmm,
sorry,
mm-hmm,
but then staying within.
And within ear's reach.
Staying within ear's reach, exactly. So that you can make those adjustments without having to leave the sweet spot, right?
Exactly.
So now, do we have like a...
You're hired.
Is there sort of like the Vidruvian...
Yeah.
Well, how do you say that? You know what I'm talking about.
You did great there.
The art.
Let's go with that.
So like, you've got like a radius, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you're probably trying to keep everything within to make sure that everything's going to be.
Absolutely. And so many designs that we, you know, had seen, in the past and still today, just ergonomically, I think their solutions sometimes made for Instagram maybe and not for actual use.
People who are doing the work.
Yeah. You see pictures and loaded up, you know, full of gear and it looks great because, you know, we're all nerds and we like to look at gear,
right,
and see the gear. But you can imagine after working at it for a lot of hours sitting at the desk, and if you've got piles of gear in front of you and you've got your monitors placed up here, it's just not only sonically is it not good, ergonomically it's horrible. And so that's why frequently in all of our Argosy designs, you will see low profile racks that are just out of the way, but within reach.
And angled so that they don't become a reflective problem.
Exactly.
Staying out of the way, but keeping keeping everything close.
Exactly. So if you're sitting properly, which I'm not, as we talked about earlier, if you're sitting properly, you know, your natural neck position and arms and hands, you know, is looking slightly down. You shouldn't be even looking straight ahead or up for extended
sure.
periods of time. So you want the monitor more down, even while on the Halo, the monitor shelf there is lowered slightly, so that it's just more comfortable to work at for extended sessions. And speaking of ergonomics, we did the same thing with, we were the first to bring the sit stand feature to the studio environment.
Yeah, yeah.
And because it is a lot more healthy to be moving.
Absolutely. And even from an acoustic standpoint, I mean, you're changing the speaker's point in space and your head's point in space. So it's almost like a free second set of monitors where, you know, the modal changes when you're standing are going to be different than what's going on when you're seated.
Yeah.
Seated.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in a perfect room, you could see that as a detriment, but you know, what's there, two perfect rooms on the whole earth? So like,
you're. Well, we let the acoustic guys worry about
that. No, for sure.
We'll move the speakers and the person and then we'll let the,
Right, right. But no, it's, you know, it's very rare that you're, you know, afforded the amount of space it takes to get a room to be perfect.
Right,
so having
right.
that ability to change the acoustics, but based on a reason for health and for fatigue and, you know, all of those
Absolutely.
Things coming into play, it's a really a good change.
There's a performance aspect of it as well.
Okay.
We tapped into once we did it, and we did that primarily for health reasons. But once we did it, we found that voiceover artists.
Oh, heck yeah.
Were all about it. And, and suddenly they had a purpose built desk for their studio that they didn't previously have access to, and they said, "Yes, you made this for us," and we were, "Yes, it's, of course we did."
I mean, it's one of the first things that I talk to with my voiceover clients when they show me their space and how they work. I'm like, "You do everything seated?" And I mean, the chest just isn't in a right place when we're seated to Absolutely. Perform vocally. So yeah, that ability to stand up and have the gear come with you is just. It's
Absolutely.
A no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, you can play, grab a guitar, hit a button, lift your desk up, you know, so you can, if you're tracking yourself and lay down some tracks. And then when you're ready to mix and do some critical listening and such, you can lower the desk, you know, at just the right height. And
yeah.
There's many benefits, but in the commercial environment, even more so when you have a commercial facility where there's a lot of different people coming in and out, working in that space.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they'll move the desk just slightly, just so that it fits them more perfectly.
For sure.
As opposed to having to fit into whatever desk they have, they can adjust it, you know, for them.
Is that motorized based available on every product that Argosy does?
Not on every product. We do have on the Halo products, as well as the Aura workstations, which is in the next room, over here. As well as in the Eclipse line that we've started to bring it to. You won't necessarily see the option online, but we've done a number of Eclipse sit stand desks as well. Those
cool.
are specifically designed for specific brands of control surfaces and mixers. And depending upon the weight of those, there's
sure.
probably
yeah,
a sit-stand solution.
That's going to change what can and cannot happen.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, you start putting all that
yes.
heavy lead on.
Exactly.
You know, we were talking earlier this morning at breakfast. The first Argosy console was designed around a Mackie 8 bus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many new launches are you doing for analog consoles at this point? I mean, I've got to imagine the workflow has gone dramatically towards the digital
yeah.
and the, you know, work surface rather than having all of those inputs built into the mixer.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
What are the sort of the big designs around the hot analog mixers these days? I mean, what does Argosy have for those, maybe the Neves and the APIs of the world?
That's when we came up with a system. You know, in the past we had the very first one that you alluded to, the M series is what we called it, for the Mackie analog 8 bus. And that's how the company got started, looking for a solution that was expandable so that because Mackie came out with that 8-bus and it was expandable. It was one of the big, you know, selling features that you could start with a 24 or a 32 channel and then add a 24E expander unit and add as many as you wanted.
Right.
And so we developed a furniture solution that could grow as somebody wanted to expand, their Mackie, 8-bus, system. And then, over, you know, the main idea being to hide all the cables and conceal, everything and protect all the connections. Mm-hmm. Then as things evolved, as you said, digitally, things became, less and less, more workstation, you know, kind of based or control surfaces. But people still want that feeling, you know, that a large format analog console gives you. No matter what they're sitting at, they want that feeling, and they want that vibe, that look.
Their clients, you know, it's often, you know.
And their clients especially,
We're putting it together to give an air of professionality to what I do here when I sit here.
When you walk into the space, there's the client, impressing the client aspect of okay, this guy knows what he's doing.
It's not a folding table.
Exactly. We talk a lot about how do you feel when you walk into your space? Are you excited to sit down and work? This is just going to be a lot of work, you know, to get this done, or you're going to be hunting for things, or you're completely distracted because of cabling and wires pouring out all over the place and it's unorganized. And we want to create not just a furniture solution, but something that's inspirational, you know, so you're excited when you walk in to get to work. So, you know, there's, of course, the resurgence of appreciation for analog desks and what's come out, but we don't really have the need for a large, heavy console anymore. We can and have adapted, created the Eclipse system that is really designed to fit virtually any analog mixer or digital control surface.
Okay.
And it allows then the user to integrate a series of producer desk space or rack space and whichever mixer or control surface that they choose, and then integrate tons of different accessories with monitor arms or pull-out keyboard trays, speaker mounts, and basically be a system that will adapt to whatever they want to do in terms of their workflow and equipment. So
that modularity is important, right? Because I mean, not everybody's going to want to tether the speakers to the desk itself, but obviously in a sit stand environment, it's critical that you do that. Mm-hmm. The speakers come with you. Mm-hmm. So having all of that ability to meet the customer where they're at, meet the client where they're at, and give them the tools that they need, but don't force stuff on them that isn't going to be something that's going to fit their solution. And Argosy seems to be very adaptive in that way.
It is. And even if they change control surfaces or mixers, you know, it's very likely that, you know, we can change out some components of their Eclipse console system, you know, in order to adapt it to what they decided to switch to.
You know, speaking of it being that we're here on a podcast, you guys have a new podcast line coming out. Is that accurate?
We do. We haven't released anything about it quite yet.
Okay.
But,
well, then maybe we'll just edit this part out.
Yeah. Possibly could.
Oh, man. Tim, tell me a little bit about the history of Argosy. Like, how did this ship get sailed?
Well, great metaphor, based on the name, Argosy, because that's actually
the Argonauts, right?
Actually what it alludes to. Yeah. Back in 94, my business partner at the time, David, built, as we've talked about earlier, a console for his Mackie analog 8-bus. Mm-hmm. And, at the time he was a manager at a clothing store. His family owned a several clothing stores at the time. He's a musician and has an eye for design, obviously. But he was managing the family clothing store and had built a console, talked to his wife at the time to let him buy a Mackie analog 8-bus. And when it showed up, she was like, "Oh, that's it? like she was kind of expecting the cover of Mix magazine, you know, or something.
She set it on a folding table.
That's it. Isn't there something you can put it in or something? And and at the time, this was back in, like I said, the 90s, the outlet malls were coming into play, and the family department store was closing, and he was kind of looking for what's next. And so I met him after I had graduated, or I was in the process of finishing up college at the time. My wife and I had moved back to the area, and I went to go apply at the clothing store to get some work and finish up my degree. And on a lark, he ended up, you know, calling Recording Magazine and saying, you know, how much is a classified ad? And so at the time, I think it was like $80 or $100 or something like that for a 2-inch classified ad in the back of the magazine. And
wild.
The lady happened to ask, well, what do you want to advertise? And he said, well, I made this desk for my Mackie analog mixer. And she said, oh, well, yeah. In fact, we're going to do a couple articles, an issue. I about said an episode. It's not an episode in magazine world. We're doing an issue on studio accessories.
Yeah.
Would you, you know, maybe send us a picture?
Yeah.
So we rushed to finish the desk and get it set up. We actually used his living room to, cleared out the living room. There's big bay windows of the Lake of the Ozarks in the background. It was gorgeous, and set up the desk at the, and, took pictures and everything like that. And sent the pictures off to the magazine and waited. Mm-hmm. And eventually, Recording Magazine came in the mail, and it was the studio accessories issue. So we're flipping through the pages and we're looking and waiting, and turn the page and there's the picture that right. we took and profiled the company. And, it was a great review. And at the very end of the article, it said, all this new company needs is a slogan or something. How about makes your Mackie look like an SSL? And they published the phone number to the clothing store where we were working. And that's how we started sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just what a wild ride, right? I mean, you were telling me earlier, like, what if that lady working at Recording Magazine was phoning it in on that particular Tuesday and didn't think to ask you what you wanted to place an ad for? And
John, I can't think of how many you think about over the 30 years that Argosy's been in business, and how many little instances there are that happened throughout since the beginning, like that lady, you know, what if she just took the order for the ad and never asked?
Yep.
How things could be different. You know,
there's no way to know, right?
Yeah, it makes you enormously, or it should make you enormously grateful.
Yeah.
And it does.
Well, it's, you know, it's a feel good story. You know, I think people need to hear things like that, you know, where, hey, you've got an idea, you saw a problem, you saw a hole in the market, and just do it. You know, put something together, put a plan in action.
Absolutely.
And see what the heck happens. You know, I mean,
you never know. And you know, months later, we find ourselves at 12th and Porter, down here after a show. And the guys, Carrie Castile from Mackie and some colleagues, you know, bring us over to the table to meet, Greg Mackie, you know, and at the time, and I remember him, you know, David and I standing there and him looking up and saying, you started an industry. Wow. And it gives me goosebumps thinking about it.
So did you, sir. Well,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. we were so excited, and grateful, again for the relationships and those little instances, how so many people have been, such a huge part of it, you know. But, we were riding high back home to Missouri from Nashville. In fact, we took a wrong turn and started, ended up deeper in Kentucky.
Oh, man, I thought we were
going to
do it.
Instead of going west where we needed to go, we still laugh about that today because we just kept talking about that interaction and
crazy
how so grateful cool. we were.
Well, Tim, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention you and I kind of had a yoga date this morning.
We did.
How did you enjoy your first hot yoga session?
It was hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you failed to mention that she was going to try to kill us. That was my very first experience with that. So that was intense. And I think I mentioned I completely overestimated my ability to follow instructions at a rapid pace because, man, she was firing them off quick.
Yeah. I mean, I'm only a few months into this practice myself. I did a local studio back in Milwaukee. I just kind of affiliated myself with and I'm kind of diving into it. But yeah, I mean, once you start knowing the poses and there's just a general flow that tends to happen, but my gosh, man, what a great way to start your morning every day and just kind of put a positivity in the air right from the get-go. And, you know, I know you've been practicing a little bit at home with the wife and some YouTube videos and things of that nature. It is a little bit different when it's 98 degrees and humid.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, she said it was, what was it, 98? 98. Is that what she said? Okay.
Yeah,
which is typically like... joke like that's basically Missouri, you know, 98 degrees and 98% humidity.
Sure.
You know, but wow, that was intense.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful for appreciate the invite because it was definitely something I want to keep up with. We've talked so many times, between then and now about just how good.
Yeah.
Feel.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because we felt so bad earlier.
Well, yeah.
Like the anything yin and yang, that's not that makes me feel amazing.
Well, we did have a few drinks last night. So there is something to be said for the detoxification of the,
that's fair.
Of the body. Tim, anything else you want to talk about while you're here? Is there something that I didn't hit on that you want everybody to know?
A few years ago, we purchased a company down here in Nashville and have been, integrating that into the product line as the Argosy Custom Shop.
Okay.
And so we have the Isobox Pro, which has been fantastic. We've made a number of significant enhancements with it and on commercial clients especially. That product is doing very, very well. So we have a couple more of those items coming out. So we have recently redesigned the website, things like that, based on, again, on customer feedback and input, making it much more easy to navigate and find, go right to products that you're looking for, even based upon the environment, because we have the AirDesk solutions, which are, super lightweight, great entry model, you know, into the Argosy product line. And can be used in really any kind of digital media environment. And that's been one of the big shifts for Argosy over the years. And you alluded to it earlier, moving from the, you know, large format analog consoles into the, digital media space. And so we have the AirDesk, Halo and other models that really can be used for any kind of screen based operation. So.
Right on. Do you have mic stands that don't? Tilt downward during the middle of an interview.
I did that with my mind. Now I'm enlightened.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, Tim, hey, thanks a lot for joining me today. This has been great. We'll do this again sometime.
Yeah. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.